Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you are listening to Fiber Talk, that twice-weekly podcast for people who do the fine art needle and thread thing. And our guest this week, returning guest from, holy smokes, more than a year ago, Jessica Grimm. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, Gary.
Boy, I was looking up. You were, because it's been a long while, you were the 44th guest we had.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so, and this is number 103. So, yeah, it's been a long while. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And it's amazing the amount of shows you and Christine have been doing and the different topics and the very interesting guests. So, yeah.
Oh, it's so much fun. Yeah. We're never bored. Never.
No.
Always something new to talk about. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So, for those who don't know, Jessica Grimm lives in Bavaria, in Germany, in Bavaria, where they're buried in snow this time of year.
Yep.
And up in the mountains, I'm sure you have a view that would make all of us jealous.
Yeah, I'm overlooking a small lake. So, yeah, I'm very privileged.
Yeah, okay. All right. That's all we're going to talk about that. Yep. Since we last talked, when we last talked, you were well into teaching and designing and so on and so forth, and I read your newsletter all the time and keep up with you and have watched you as you've worked through quite a transition, and I've been anxious to get back to you to talk about it, because you've been through quite a roller coaster ride transitioning from needleworker and needlework designer to textile artist, I guess would be the term we would use.
Yeah, and, yeah, that's what I now call myself, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's been an interesting ride to watch you make that transition, and also the frustrations of trying to get classified for healthcare in Germany. That did that ever get turned around, or are they still just not recognizing you as an artist?
Well, I don't know. I went into appeal against them, and I haven't heard back. So I hope that they look into my case a bit more careful than they did the first time, because the first time I got an email reply pretty quickly, and they said, we don't do knitting. And the thing is, with the German words for embroidery and knitting, they differ just one letter.
Oh.
So I had to point out to them, well, I'm not a knitter, I embroider. But it didn't help. And the strange thing is, I never thought of applying for healthcare through the artist scheme. But I have a friend who is a journalist for, he has to do with stock markets and things like that. So he makes quite a lot of money, but he is considered an artist or a journalist. They come under the same scheme. So he said to me, well, Jessica, try to get in there. Because if I'm an artist, you certainly are an artist. But no, it didn't quite work out that way. So I'm still waiting. I hope they will accept me.
Yeah, but, I hope so too. And you know, just for your own personal, I hope that they do it. But yeah. It also has really, your experience has really put me on a just eyes and ears open to this topic in general. Because it's you know, there's quite a debate that to be had about whether needlework people are artists or are hobbyists or craft people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm of the mind that in most cases, in one way or another, we're artists. And so, yeah, so I know you listen, so you've heard the question come up more than once.
Yeah.
And what defines that?
That's a really difficult question. And what I found very discriminating is that what they said here is that embroidery is purely a technique and not an art form. And when I then ask, yeah, and when people are painting in acrylics versus to aquarelle or oils, that's purely a technique, and you can get classes in purely one technique as opposed to learning how to draw or how to paint. So they make they separate us. They make a divide. We are different for somehow because we work with threat. And that makes for very interesting discussions and conversations. And the best thing was, of course, with the local art group I tried to join, and that they were saying, well, you can become an artist if you join us and pay us and we learn you how to paint. And that was, yeah.
Yeah, see, and that's the interesting part of it is, if it's painting, it's art, and you know, but then you can talk about thread painting.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Okay. How is that appreciably different? Your medium is different, but the end result is still applying colors and blends and textures to create a piece. Yeah.
Yeah, and especially the form of thread painting that is taught at the Royal School of Needlework, where you thread paint from a picture from nature. You take your own picture of a flower or you get it from a magazine, but it is very much like art when they do the egg drawing and things like that. And yeah, they were telling me, no, it's completely different. You work with fabric. You are a crafter. Yeah.
Yeah, and I come back. Well, you and I had a little exchange over our discussion with Linda Eaton at Winterthur, and she, you know, giving some of the history of how painting defined what is art and what isn't, and and you can make the argument. You know, some people will make the argument that it's not art if you are just simply copying a chart, thread for thread and color for color.
Yeah.
But then, you know, the dividing line is if I take that chart and change the threads, change the colors, make some modifications, then some people would argue that is art.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so too. As soon as you start to put your own ideas into it and modify things, you put your own creativity in, and I think art is being creative.
Yes, exactly. Well, and that maybe that's the definition that we ought to start with or hang on to, is just that art is being creative.
Yeah.
And go from there.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, especially when I design something really from the bottom up, and there's a deeper layer of meaning in what I'm stitching, then certainly that's art. If a hat design is art, I'm not sure, although I enjoy them, because then you copy a chart stitch for stitch, and I wouldn't advise changing out colors there.
Yeah, I don't know how you can argue that what you do as a designer is not art.
No.
Did you give up on the painting group then?
Yeah.
They don't
want me, and I certainly wasn't going to pay them for getting taught how to paint. No.
Groups will always take your money, won't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is a real shame. I think we could have benefited from each other really well. But, oh well.
Well,
maybe
and there's another aspect of it, too, is benefiting from each other.
Yeah.
Is I got to believe if you or I or anyone sat down with a painter and watched them construct a piece.
Yeah,
and could have a discussion along the way and do it from the perspective of needlework, that there would be a lot to be learned in terms of how they're dealing with shades and texture, and that could be applied to threads.
Definitely. How you build up a design, positive space, negative space, that things should be lighter towards the top and darker towards the bottom. Yeah.
And I would think that the reverse would be true.
Definitely. Yeah.
You with a design in your head, sit down with a painter and say, look, this is how I'm going to approach it from a painter perspective. How would you do it?
Yeah. And it's basically what I'm doing with my husband, because I usually come up with the ideas what I want to stitch. But my husband is very good at drawing and painting. So I usually just talk my ideas over with him, and he is actually putting them to paper, and then I am going to stitch. So we benefit enormously from discussing these things and how do you approach design. And he can often say, oh, well, when I sketch something, just change it a little over here, or position the figure a little differently, or turn a feet or foot and see how it makes the figure stand up more anatomically correct. Mm-hmm. And that really helps.
Mm-hmm. So you actually are able to live that exchange. That's great.
Yeah.
It sounds like your husband's one of those guys where you start talking about something, he just grabs a pencil, and next thing you know, there it is, huh?
Yeah, he does. Yeah, that's brilliant. I don't know how.
I don't get that at all.
No, me neither. I can do reasonable well drawings, but not nearly as good as he can. No.
Yeah, that's a talent, and I've made a couple of serious runs at, you know, you should be able to sit down with a piece of paper and a pencil, and look at something and recreate it, and yeah. No. There's a vision, a talent that I don't possess and never will. No.
And the really weird thing is, I can do lifelike threat painting really good, mm-hmm. but as soon as I have to replicate the same thing with pencil, nope.
And you would think that would translate, wouldn't you?
Yeah. You would think I can do both things, but no, I can't.
No.
I learned to live with that.
You found the right guy, so there you have it.
Yeah. Oh, definitely, yeah.
That'd be fun. I'd love to be a fly on the wall and watch that and exchange and watch you guys learn off of each other. That'd be fun.
Oh, yeah, we could install a webcam.
Yeah, don't. Don't. Here's a tip. Don't.
No.
No. So you posted in one of your statements as you were making this journey that you did. I really got a chuckle out of it. You attended a second high-end craft market. It was such a success that I vowed not to attend another one for the rest of my life.
Yeah. It was such a shame. They do a really high-end craft markets here in the surroundings of Munich, because Munich is a very affluent area, so they can afford to do them. There is customers coming through the door. So they usually have a very spectacular venue where they do it, a beautiful old farmhouse that they've done up to, really high-end finishes. And I attended it twice. The first one was not really good, but the weather was bad. So we said, okay, we'll try a second time. And the second time it was just so bad. I hardly made any sales, so I didn't recover on the entry fee. And because they are so high end and they hire these really upscale venues, the entry fee is really, really high.
Mm-hmm.
And people were just, they were not getting what I was doing. I constantly got asked, this is not Bavarian. This has no tradition here. Why are you doing it? And I thought, no, this is totally wrong. I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to take the abuse.
Well, that's interesting. Because when I read that statement, I thought that you were so busy and it was so much work that you were just exhausted and there wasn't enough pay. But now to hear you tell that, it was quite the opposite. It just, you were just a square peg in a round hole with this thing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. And it was such a shame, because I always think what I do is so unique. There are not many people around that do high-end gold work embroidery that you can actually see when they are working, and that you can ask questions,
right.
But people react very, they just don't get it. And it doesn't matter if I'm in a museum or if I'm at one of these craft markets, they don't get what I'm doing. You constantly get the question, how long will it take? Well, 200 hours is nothing. Right. Yeah, why would you want to do it? Do you make a lot of money? No. But it's the journey, and I'm enjoying it. I'm learning things, and I'm passing on my skills. But then at some point, I noticed that for me, I still have very good vision. I'm 40. I can still see the thread count of my ground fabric very well. Although I do a lot of computer work, I'm not behind the screen all day. So I probably have better vision than most of my peers.
Uh-huh.
So I actually started to ask the people that made the most rude comments to have a closer look at what I was doing. And then I found out that they can't actually see what I'm doing.
Oh, my.
So they don't get it. I got these weird, you wouldn't believe it, Gary. I got these weird comments, oh, she's doing cross stitch. And I was like, no, I'm not. Oh, then you're doing petit point. No, I'm doing gold work. And then when they were really with their noses on my work, they saw that I was doing something else. And that made me think that probably when I'm doing things like this, that I should get some enlargements of my work.
Mm-hmm.
So that people can actually see.
So it's an so in a way it's an education problem.
Definitely, yeah, yeah.
And of course, education assumes that there's a listener on the other end, which is a bold assumption. But but it really, yeah, it some. And I wonder how much of that permeates the hobby anyway. When it comes to, you know, I'll put in air quotes, outsiders, people who don't stitch. Really an education problem, because you know, I've run into that too. How long did it take you?
Yeah.
Well, a long time. I don't keep track. I don't care.
Yeah, indeed.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's with the education thing. I started to do this anger-free communication techniques where you when you get a nasty remark, you say, pardon me, I didn't quite get that. Can you repeat that? Things like that. And people, then I got into conversations with people, and they usually turned around and, oh, I didn't mean it that way. It's actually quite interesting what you're doing. But doing that all day, you are exhausted at the end of the day. And the only thing I want to do is stitch and have nice conversations, but not this constant educating people. It saps your energy.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, okay. So I can see, so these little bits and pieces here along the way, have really changed you in the way that you're approaching things.
Yeah. And as soon as I started to call myself an artist, and when I went to this nice small art exhibition with Marion Werner, I instantly, people perceived me differently.
Oh.
And they were so much nicer. It was no longer the needlework every woman can do. All of a sudden, it was an art form.
Mm-hmm.
And people were so nice and so much positive energy. And I thought, ooh, wait a minute. I just have to brand myself differently. And I'm probably still going to make the same small amount of money, but the energy is so much more positive.
Yeah. Well, that's the piece that I think the piece of baggage that this hobby in general carries is that perception that it's needle and thread, so therefore it's women's work, mending clothes, making a shirt, whatever it might be. And people really struggle to get beyond that and see that what we all do, and you infinitely more than me, is not that. It's not mending a shirt, you know.
No, it's not. No. It's a way to express myself.
Yeah.
And
there was a perfect example in that post you did about the dress you bought from the Sinai, because that dress has been mended.
Yeah.
Because of it's been used to work and to wear.
Yeah.
It's been mended, but then right alongside of it is needle art.
Yeah, it's this whole story of this woman who expresses herself, and when her life situation changes and she becomes a widow but wants to marry again, she changes the colors and the patterns and she's adding to it. And this dress must have been really a treasure because it is mended so much, Gary. I think there are at least 50 different small pieces added onto it.
To read the story, it clearly is not just a dress that's worn to cook and clean. It's a life story.
Yeah, and it has meaning. People would know, she wants to marry again. Let's see, who do we have?
That the symbolism in all of that and then what you did with it was, I just found it absolutely riveting.
It's because
of course here in America, that dress would have been thrown away a long time.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And the strange thing is, the colors on the dress are still very, very bright. They are really bright.
Mm-hmm.
But then the background fabric is very, very worn.
Right.
And those two, we would have chucked it out a long time ago.
Yeah, but it tells a story. And when you enlighten us about the culture and what those colors mean and the patterns, that piece of cloth really takes on some serious meaning. It's fascinating.
So
as you work to become this artist, tell me about this this exhibition you did. I'm fascinated by exhibitions in general, but this one that you did with Marion Werner, tell about that a little bit.
Brilliant. Well, one day I was working in my studio and there was a lot going on in the house here. So I didn't hear the doorbell ring. And because I live very rural, all the doors are open. They are not locked. So there I sit, stitching, being engrossed in my work, and there are three people standing behind at me all at once.
Not one, but three.
They scared me.
Yeah.
And then they went, would you be interested in doing an exhibition with us? And I was I don't know you. How do you know me? And because they scared you. You're so startled.
Right.
It took me a while to come to my senses again. But they were very friendly. And they were explaining that they had been doing these small-scale exhibitions, I think, for 17 years. And it's in a neighboring village. I think it's about 15 kilometers away. So it's very close. And they always invite two other artists into their own home. And you exhibit throughout their home.
Oh.
And it was just so lovely. And there is no entry fee other than that you bake two cakes because it goes over 2 days. So they need one cake on one day and the other cake on the other day. And they were so supportive. And you pay a little bit for having some flyers printed.
Right.
But that's all. And over the years, she has built up such a nice name for herself that she has very many regular people who know that around that time of the year, there is something going on at Marion Werner's. So you get a lot of people through the door, and I saw quite a lot of work. Yeah.
Well, that's fun. So, so your craft show sells nothing and costs you a fortune.
Yeah.
And Marion Werner's exhibition cost you two cakes. That's a good deal.
That's what I thought as well. And because she's a sculptor.
Oh.
And she makes funny things. They most of them have a slight religious theme, but she pokes fun of overly zealous religious people.
Uh-huh.
But in a very mild and fun way, so I don't think it offends people. It is really funny, and her sculptures are a little bit cartoon like.
Mm.
So that was great fun, and then we had a local painter as well, and she's actually living in the same village as I am, so we just had great fun, and it was also supportive of each other. And that is just, yeah. And that landed me the next exhibition I'm going to do in August, because there were people from the gallery or the museum I'll be in then visiting, and they said, oh yeah, we want you. So yeah, brilliant.
So you found a little world where you're wanted.
Yes.
Excellent.
And that's a very good feeling.
Yeah, I can imagine. As opposed to pay us money and we'll teach you to paint if you want to be a member. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a whole different energy.
Mm-hmm.
And it is nice that you're taken seriously. Not too seriously, but more serious than as opposed to, oh, you're just a woman who stitches.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah.
Yeah. So when you do these exhibitions, so this one that's coming up in August is at a museum where you have to produce what, X number of pieces to hang?
No, there are two rooms, and okay. I'm just taking everything that is still in my possession, and I'm going to hang the walls with everything I have. Because it's very large, but they have a nice railing system, so I can hang wherever I want.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to produce one or two new pieces to go up on the walls there. But it depends a little bit if I can put in the hours to actually make them.
Right.
Because now with all the snow that's still laying around here, the white glare isn't very beneficial when you're stitching. I had never thought that. I actually let down all the window coverings so that I was in the dark and stitching with my daylight lamp. But yeah.
People cry for light so they can stitch, and you're trying to shut it out. Okay.
Yeah.
But that, yeah.
I never thought I would do that.
Yeah, when you get snow, especially a lot of snow, it does change the light in a house. Yeah, it's weird. Yeah. Even at night.
Yeah.
It's a strange thing. So you have all these pieces you've done, and so it's really just a matter of getting those organized.
Yeah.
Creating some kind of a label, and then you want to have two fresh ones.
Yeah, and get everything up there. And the other thing I think I need to produce is a flyer again. And then I, one evening we will have an official opening. And I'm looking forward to that. I'm wondering what tribe might visit me there. It'll be really, really nice because they are still fairly close to Munich as well. And they have a great reputation. They are in a small village, but they have been going for years as well. And they have quite a good reputation for new artists getting their exposure there. So who knows?
Well, it sounds like it, if nothing else, you'll enjoy it. So,
oh, definitely. Yeah.
Now, is this will this be with other artists or will it be a solo exhibition?
No, it's a solo exhibition.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's only me.
Good for you.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Now, do they kick that off with a reception the first night?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then it's only, I think, weekends that it's open. It's not open during the week, but that's fine. I think you get most people during the weekends anyway because it's so rural. Yeah.
Yeah. And something where on those weekends you'll spend a good deal of time there or will you?
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I'll be sitting there the whole afternoon. Yeah.
And these, your pieces are then for sale or are they just simply there for observing?
Both. I will have a few pieces that are for sale, but the things I don't sell are the pieces I made for the Royal School of Needlework.
Ah.
Now, that are my pieces. And then there's one or two pieces that I won't sell yet, but they might go in the future, yeah.
It takes
a while to let them go.
Well, exactly. And that's a thing that I would struggle with. I mean, I don't design, so it's not a problem for me. But if it's something I created, because Christine and I have a friend that from the aquarium hobby. She's a scientific illustrator.
Okay.
And a brilliant talent. And I mean, she'll do fish, and she actually gets the scales right.
Oh,
you
wow.
know, counts them. Everything is just right. She'll do botanicals, flowers, and they're just gorgeous. And she does them in all kinds of medium. Colored pencil is the one that blows me away. When she gets done with a colored pencil one, you can't even you did that in pencil. But, but she will sell any of her originals. And,
okay.
And, I talked to her once about that. I said, how can you do that? I mean, you got, you know, hours of dedication to get this precisely right, the colors and the shading and everything. And then you just let that go out the door.
Yeah.
And she said, I'll make another one.
Yeah.
And I really struggled with that because, I mean, when you put that kind of energy in, like when you design a piece and then stitch it and modify it and adjust it and get it just so, I mean, there's a good chunk of you in that.
Yeah.
And to just let that walk out the door, I would struggle with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't mind so much with the smaller pieces. It is more difficult with the longer ones because it's like, you have been with them for so long, it's hard to let them go.
Right.
But one of the things I found very strange, I sold my beetles I had done with the real beetle wings.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a small label on them with my signature and when I made them. And the person purchasing them said, yeah, I'm taking those, but you have to remove the label.
Ooh.
That was a little strange, but I thought, yeah, what the heck? Yeah, okay, if you want that, yeah. But with the bigger ones, when somebody would say, well, actually, I don't like it, this color, can you take it out and can you put in a new color? No, I can't.
Oh,
sorry.
My.
Yeah, no. But with that was a strange request, yeah. And I think that, again, is this ambiguity that, okay, it's art. It is something she's going to put up on the wall, but it is still not art, so you can change it a little.
Yeah, yeah, because you'd never think of going to Rembrandt and saying, yeah, could you make that jacket blue because...
Yeah, yeah, okay, can you please snip off your signature? Yeah, no.
I just the mental process in this hobby is... I think probably one of the things that interests me most is those kinds of things. Well, it's just needle and thread. Can't you just change it? No, yeah. I created this to look like this for a reason.
Yeah, yeah. And it's things.
And my signature goes on it because I created it.
Yeah, yeah. And it's things now. I've been in this area in this field for about 8 years now. Really doing the top end embroidery, and I still learn, and I still learn a lot about myself, usually through the interaction with others.
Mm-hmm.
I had a request about a year ago and I did it, and with hindsight I shouldn't. I have a regular pupil who comes a lot, and she usually doesn't finish things.
Uh-huh.
Okay, we all know life is busy, that happens. So she had a whole bunch of those half-finished workshop pieces she had done with me. And she said, well, I'll pay you. Can you finish them?
Hmm.
And I did it. And it didn't feel good.
Yeah.
And because when she asked, I was, oh, yeah, sure, I'll do that for you. I like her, so no problem. And then... during the process of finishing them, I was sort of, no, this is wrong. I mean, I did it.
Yeah.
But I will not do it again. And I can't precisely put into words what was bothering me so much, but it was wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I know how you feel. I used to do wedding photography. I did wedding photography for 10 years. I shot for a lady who it was her studio. And my job was to just go photograph the wedding, hand her the film, and get a check, and I was done with it. She was the one that had to deal with, and this was back in the day when they put together wedding albums, and you had prints and negatives, and she would work for hours with the bride to assemble the photos and put the album together. And we were having a discussion one day, and because she'd had a couple that were basically, she was not going to make money off of them because they had put her through such a ringer.
Oh, yeah.
And we, the discussion came down to, there is some business that it's more profitable to turn it away.
Yes. Yeah.
And so, yeah, so I relate to that. And we we talked about that because, of course, every wedding was an experience, good or bad. It was always an experience and, you know, stories to tell for the rest of my life. But, there's some business that is, it's not worth the money. Yeah.
No. Yeah. And that is really hard because in my field, I mean, I wrote the numbers online, you're not making money.
Right.
Or very little money. So at some point you start to accept almost everything. And I came to a point where I said, no, I'm not going to do everything because at the end of the day, it's just money. And I'd rather eat butter bread with peanut butter than that I'm going to accept this job so that I can afford some Nutella.
Right.
I'm just not going to do it.
Yeah.
And that is very important as well, because you've seen the whole discussion online, and it was very interesting. When I wrote my blog post that I had quite a rough year and financially it hadn't been worth it, there were a few comments on the blog post directly. But I received many more in my email box and from quite big names in the industry.
Uh-huh.
Because when you look at people's Instagram accounts and Facebook accounts, everything is just amazing and fantastic.
Right.
Well, yes. Of course, that can't be true. And it isn't true. There are far more of us really, really struggling. And of course, they don't want to have their names on my blog. That is clear. I'm not going to name names here.
Right.
But I was actually shocked because I thought, oh, they are doing okay. It's just me. Hmm. Then it was good to read that it isn't just me. There's more of us having the same problems.
You have good company.
Oh, dear. Yeah. 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 But it's sad in itself because it's so hard to get paid fairly for the amount of time you put into things. That is a real problem in the industry.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was, the last time I flew home from Germany, I was stitching on the plane. I was actually in Munich and was actually going to, I was on someone else's dime, and so there was no time to come visit, but I was
going to,
yeah. If I could have stayed an extra day, you were going to get a call. But but the first question from a flight attendant, was how much time? And then do you sell it? Are you going to sell that? And my response was no. I said no because I could never get enough money out of it to make it worthwhile. So No.
And that was very interesting with your conversation you had with Trish Burr.
Mm-hmm.
When she was saying that she now wants to concentrate on other things.
Right.
Because she was constantly thinking, oh no, I can't design it this way because then it has too many colors and it becomes too difficult for people, or the kit becomes too expensive, or you have those customers who will be really upset and will be nasty to me because they don't get it. And that was, that could have been me talking.
Well, and that's kind of that's kind of an ongoing battle as you work through a design career, though, is you want to design what people will buy, but then there's an integrity, and I don't know if that's the right word,
but a
commitment to your art and to what you see and what you want to project as yourself. And I'm sure you bounce back and forth, and then you get to a point where, wait, I'm just doing this for me. If people like it, fine. If they don't, fine. I'm doing this.
Yeah. And I became very selfish because I was thinking, hey, I've turned 40 last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, how many years of good eyesight do I have left? And am I going to spend it trying to make it big, whatever that is? Or am I going to enjoy myself?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to be selfish. I'm going to enjoy myself.
Well, but yeah, and that's, you know, that's selfish in a more positive way, though.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I owe it to me to do what I enjoy. And if I happen to have an audience that likes it, then
fine.
That's gravy.
Yeah.
Icing on the cake. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
But at night, I go to bed happy with myself.
Yeah. 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 And that was the whole reason behind stopping all the social media things I did. I spent so much time online and so little time stitching. Because you're not done with writing a great post or making fantastic photos. People want interaction with you.
Right.
But that interaction doesn't translate into you making more money. That was really interesting because that was one of the reactions to my blog post on the whole issue, that people said, well, by not being on social media, you actually harming your sales. Well, I got news for these people. That's not the case. Because my most loyal customers are the people who read my newsletter.
Uh-huh.
And the other ones who see a post on Instagram, they see so many posts on Instagram. Why buy from me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And the amount of time to generate a sale through the social media is in no relation to the revenue I got out of it. No. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is a much more peaceful life, Gary.
Yeah. Well, but you also have something that a lot of people don't have in that you are consistent and persistent with your newsletter.
Yeah.
And you know, that's where newsletters and blogs tend to fall down is when people pound away at them and then they slip a week and then they slip 2 weeks. And pretty soon they're not keeping up the conversation. And I, you know, and you do that. And that's, I think there's a difference. You can walk away from Facebook because you are persistent with your newsletter and your newsletter has content in it that is enjoyable to read and informative. And,
ooh,
and
thank you.
Well, I mean, it is, it really is. And, so there's a social media there that isn't the Facebook, Instagram, social media.
No. And I know that when I'm writing something that is not happy, that I will lose subscribers to the newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
But at least that's an honest story. You get the good, you get the bad. It's like being married.
Right.
Yeah. And I think there is a group of embroidery people out there that really appreciate it. It's like me when I receive the emails from much bigger names than myself that actually say, well, Jessica, we've been through this and we made that or that decision.
Mm-hmm.
That was really, in a way, uplifting and motivating.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, just knowing you're not alone. It's huge.
Yeah. And that no matter how hard you work, you can't always pinpoint why you are not the one making it big.
Mm-hmm.
No, you can't.
Yep. China.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, when I read that you went to China to teach, the first thing that enters my head is you went to the land of embroidery, mm-hmm. needlework at its utmost, and you taught there. So when we were able to do this next podcast, I really wanted to learn about your experience there.
Well, it was absolutely great. I found this email sitting in my email box and it said, well, are you interested in teaching embroidery in China? Well, the first thing you think is somebody is taking the mic. but then she was naming other people that I knew and I had worked with before. So I knew that it was a serious request.
Yeah.
And I said, well, why me? Why not a teacher from China? And she explained to me, this was a very lovely lady, Edith, and she explained to me, she said, well, we want to learn something about European embroidery.
Oh.
And we want somebody who can talk a bit about the history of embroidery techniques. And we want somebody with an academic background. And you seem to be ideally suited.
Hmm.
Brilliant. And we took it from there. And I started to design really classical things that are quintessential European from different areas in Europe. And I had a blast. They were so nice. It was all so very well organized. And my students, because, okay, there were probably three that could actually speak a little bit of English.
Uh-huh.
Then I had my translator, I had the organizer, and another girl from Hong Kong. They could speak really good English, my level of English, and the rest couldn't.
Uh-huh.
And I was amazed how well you can still teach people. And they were so dedicated, Gary.
Yeah.
It was a little bit scary.
not the student you're used to.
No. This is a whole different level. Yeah. Yeah. And it was very, very nice. I actually had two men there, and they came from Tibet.
Mm.
Because there is a cultural exchange program going on where they are trying to find ways how they can monetize their traditional handicrafts. So they were actually sponsored so that they could attend. But they came from really rural Tibet. And they had never been on an airplane. They had never been in a real city. But they were so lovely, and they couldn't even speak Chinese.
Uh-huh.
And we were still, we laughed so much, because one of the really strange things, humor is always very dependent on the culture you come from.
Sure, sure.
Strange thing is, the Dutch and the Chinese, same kind of humor.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Jokes that I couldn't do in Germany because or even in England because people would be a bit offended.
Mm-hmm.
They went down really well. and that was just so much fun. We did this whole sampler thing, and those samplers were normally made by the girls to show off their proficiency with needlework.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also a great advertisement for when you wanted to get married.
Yes.
So that your in-laws knew that they had a decent housewife. So every day when we were done with stitching, they would all go home. And the next day, most of them had finished the little sampler I gave them.
Oh, no.
Yeah, amazing. So every day we were looking for the best daughter-in-law. Or son-in-law.
Uh-huh, sure.
It's so much fun. It was just, yeah, they were really, really great. Yeah, and I learned a lot as well.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, it seems to me like there was a two-way learning street here.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Because let's face it, what we hear in the press about China is not necessarily what is going on there.
Right.
But when you go over there, you see it from a whole different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And I think combining the two gives me a different understanding of what's going on.
Yeah.
And that is always, that's priceless.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and you know, that, don't want to get into anything political, but, you know, same thing for the U.S.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of regular folks over here just trying to get through the days. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and that... I mean, I've been to the U.S., I've seen things, I've talked to people, and the same thing, I've been to far more obscure countries like Syria and Libya. And the stories you read here in the newspapers, and then especially when people start to discuss these newspapers. And then you say, well, actually, I've been there. It looked quite different.
Yeah.
And it enriches you enormously. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No. Yeah.
So when you're teaching in China, what techniques are you teaching? Just straight surface embroidery or?
We did four different things. I started them off with normal crewel work.
Okay.
And they were amazed because they do everything in silk.
Mm-hmm.
And the museums, we were teaching everything is silk, 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 silk with a few gold threads. It's totally amazing that museum, if you're ever in Hangzhou in China, go. It's beyond anything I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And then I asked them to stitch with wool on linen. And they were sort of, wool on linen. That's for poor people.
Right.
Because
right.
They have their ideas about Europe and Europeans as we have them about them. And then I started to stitch and they were going, oh, this is nice. That is very nice linen, because we had the traditional linen twill, which is really a dream to stitch on. And we had the really good quality crewel wool from Langley Threads.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And they were going, oh, you don't need silk. This is really nice.
Oh, some eyes got open there, huh?
that was really fun, because they had never thought of doing anything else than silk embroidery. Mm-hmm. And then we were doing, I let them do an Appenzell monogram, so very fine white work.
Mm-hmm.
That was an eye-opener for them, because it was still very fine, but with cotton threads on very fine linen. So that was quite an eye-opener. And then we did a bit of swan embroidery.
Mm.
They enjoyed themselves there as well. And I think the best thing was the goldwork embroidery.
Yeah.
Because the Chinese do have goldwork embroidery, but it's almost only couching.
Oh.
And the hollow threads that we have, the pearls, and the pearl, the cylindrical things, they don't have them. And they were just, oh, yeah, nice. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, nice.
A whole new dimension, yes.
Yeah, it was for them. It was a real eye-opener that there's more out there than the very fine and very delicate silk embroidery.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, and you can see, I'm sure their perception of when you say wool is stuff spun off the farm. why would anyone stitch with that?
Because you have to understand, they see us as being very, very backward.
Okay.
And that goes really far, because we started to chat a little bit of where I live, because Chinese want to know, where are you from? Who are your parents? Who are you married to? Mm-hmm. Do you have kids? Do you have animals? Do you have pets? They really want to know who you are. So you start off anything you do when you introduce yourself with a little story about what you're doing. So at some point I explained that in my village, there's tons of people who do not have a smartphone, who don't have their own email address, because they just don't need it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that for Chinese people, they don't get it. But then we were in Beijing, in the middle of Beijing, and their people are very digitized, but they don't have their own toilet in their home.
Oh.
But still, they would say, we are backwards. And that's just realizing these things. That is, in a way, it's mind-boggling.
Mm-hmm.
And we had great fun, because they laughed. How can it be that in your village people don't have a smartphone? How do they pay each other? Well, with coins and cash. And of course, they pay everything with their smartphones.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I encountered that. I was at a gathering here in the States, but there was a large contingent from China. And that subject came up. And I was really surprised. But yeah, they do. They pay everything with those smartphones, everything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, why would you have cash? You just do this.
Yeah.
And yeah. Yeah, it was different for me. I I didn't know that went on because, of course, we can do that. I mean, I'm sure you can too, Apple Pay and whatever, but it's a rare thing that you actually do it. But no, that's normal for them. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's everywhere. It's when you buy something from a street vendor, he will have a little plasticized card with his QR code on it, and you have your WeChat profile, and you just scan it with your smartphone and you pay him.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Totally amazing.
Yeah. At the dinner for that event I was at, I ended up getting a WeChat account because.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It was like, I can't even sit at the table here without an account. So, and plenty of coaching how to set it up too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Because at the beginning, everything is in Chinese.
Yes. Yeah. We had to get converted. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Nuts. We're running out of time. It happens every time. We got to wrap up, but Heaven and Earth Designs.
Yeah.
Who was I was talking with someone a couple weeks ago about that. They fascinate me. But what fascinates me more is people who do them. Because they're just so ominous to me. And you're doing one.
Yeah.
And you put a picture up and you're parking threads, but you're also labeling them.
Yeah, because I'm doing the Heaven and Earth Design a Stitch in Time or a Stitching Shelf. It goes under several names. It is my first one. I've never done one. I've seen many, and I was always pretty amazed by them. But I really like this design. I always thought, ooh, I'm going to do it. So I started, I think, nearly 2 years ago. I'm still on the first page.
Okay.
But that has a really good reason.
Okay.
The piece is
sell it,
so
Jessica,
big.
Sell it. Tell us.
I had no frame to have it on.
Mm.
So I started actually stitching it in the hand. How crazy are you? So I couldn't park my threads and progress is very slow. And then I was given this huge frame by the people that make other frames for me. And they said, well, it's not very, very good. It has a few issues, but if you can use it, here it is. And I said, oh yeah, I can use it. I know something for it. And now every evening, when we're watching TV on the TV that we don't have, we watch on our laptop, but I think it still counts as a TV evening.
Yeah.
I'm actually
credit for
doing
that,
my
yes.
head design. And it is great fun. I have a big roll of masking tape, and I put the number, the thread number, and the symbol on it when I want to park a thread, and I stick the little label on top of the thread and onto my fabric. Hmm. Because you can't just park threads without labeling them, because it has 237 colors.
Right.
And that is, I think, half of all the DMC colors there are, and some are very, very similar.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I've seen many people who park threads, and they'll have, 40 or 50 threads working at once, and there's nothing to tell them what color it is.
Oh dear.
I don't even know how you do that, but it must be. Well, they brought it up in a hole where that color's going to go.
And that's possible. Yeah.
Yeah, and they'll get to that later, and it'll show up, and it won't matter. But it's just, I know I'll never start one because I'll never finish it. it would just never happen. But it is really an amazing aspect of the hobby to me, the people who do that, because and they're beautiful pieces when they're finished. Oh.
Yeah. And for me, it is purely relaxation. I'm not trying to prove anything. You should see the back. It's not one bird's nest. It's a bird colony in a tree. It's really bad. But I'm so happy. And my husband is watching TV with me, and he's usually doing something else as well. We are not very good at just watching TV.
Mm-hmm.
And he sits there, and the look on his face when I'm saying, ooh, I done another 25 stitches, and then 3 hours later. He doesn't get it, no.
No, no, no.
But They are really fun, Gary. If you have the space, yeah, they are really fun. Just set one up. It can stand in the corner, and yeah, you just slowly work on them.
I don't think that's going to happen. I really don't.
I would never have done it. I really like this design. It spoke to me with all these ladies sitting behind their frames, embroidering throughout the seasons it is. I think that is really very pretty. Yeah. I probably could have bought a print of the thing, but that's not quite the same.
No, but it'd be on your wall a lot faster.
Well, the thing is, I don't think we have a wall that is actually big enough
Oh.
to house the thing when it's done.
Got that problem too. Okay.
So I think it goes up on the ceiling.
Yeah. Well, hey. Hey, wherever there's space, wherever there's space. Jessica, we got to end this thing. Darn it. What a
Yeah,
treat.
that was fun.
Yes. Thanks so much for doing this. And there's still more. We didn't even get all of the things on the sheet here, so that means you got to come back again. So, yep.
Yeah, my pleasure. This is always so much fun.
That's what it'll be. All right. Thanks for doing this. Thanks to everybody for listening, and I'll be back on Wednesday.